Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
We did not come here just to clean up crises. We came here to build a future. So tonight, I return to speak to all of you about an issue that is central to that future, and that is the issue of health care. I'm not the first president to take up this cause, but I am determined to be the last.
Last night, President Barack Obama addressed a joint session of Congress and a national television audience in an effort to get a health care reform bill passed by both houses and placed on his desk this year. The president stressed the urgency of passage, saying the idea of national health care reform and universal coverage was first proposed by President Theodore Roosevelt almost 100 years ago. He spoke in favor of reforming the insurance industry so they could not deny coverage for pre-existing conditions or drop coverage of individuals when they get sick. And he spoke in favor of a public health insurance option to, in his words, provide more competition. But Republicans are skeptical, claiming the plan would cost hundreds of billions of dollars, would bankrupt the private insurance industry, cause health care costs to increase, and would also hurt seniors on Medicare. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we have two guests with different points of view on the issue. Democratic State Representative Donna Seidel of Wausau has made universal coverage at the state level a top priority, and she favors the president's initiative. On the other side, Dr. Fernando Riveron is a Wausau area surgeon with concerns about how government involvement could negatively impact the healthcare system in our country. What do you think? Our lines are open at 261-6371. That's 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area, or toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And Representative Seidel, I hope you don't mind if I call you Donna for the next hour. And Dr. Fernando Riveron, I'm going to call you Fritz, if that's all right.
That's great. Thank you.
Let's start with you, Donna. You have made universal health coverage a legislative priority. Why have you singled that issue out?
Well, Glenn, from the day I first started campaigning for this position in 2004, I heard daily, over and over, as a top priority from people throughout North Central Wisconsin that then they were finding more and more difficulties affording coverage, or finding that when they thought they did in fact have coverage, that they were disappointed to learn that it didn't take care of the needs that they had. They were struggling in their jobs, small businesses that clearly employ so many of our people in the area and are important to our economy statewide and across the nation, were struggling to find a way to maintain this benefit for their employees and still be competitive in the marketplace. These problems have continued and actually have gotten worse. So we've worked hard on this at the state level.
With the Healthy Wisconsin Plan, which did not get passed, but would you prefer to see a federal initiative?
Oh, absolutely. I think that we believe that it would be much more efficient and effective in managing all parts of this very complicated issue if we can do it on a national level.
Dr. Riveron, you're a surgeon, just like the Republican who gave the response to President Obama's address last night.
I'm a cardiothoracic surgeon in Wausau.
And why, as a surgeon, do you have some reservations about government involvement in this issue?
Well, that's a multi-tiered answer. For one thing, approximately 71% of my patients are Medicare patients. And so over my career, which is now spanned about 20 years, I've had a lot of interaction with Medicare and watched the evolution of what is a government-run healthcare system, present since 1965, Medicare, Medicaid, now SCHIP, BadgerCare, all government-run. And so I've had the opportunity to watch the track record of government-run systems. And
you have problems with the way Medicare is being run.
I do. I think it's pretty clear the the numbers are that Medicare is going to be insolvent by 2017, but the rapid rise of Medicare, if you graph it out, is Medicare expenses are growing at an absolutely unsustainable level. And Medicare is actually a model for the systemic problems with our healthcare system. I'm somewhat concerned that we're biting off an entire chunk of the American gross domestic product, 18% to 20% by estimates, without understanding that we can fix a system piecemeal mm-hmm. or develop a track record with the existing system that we have.
I'm going to ask you a personal question. I don't want to dwell on this, but you come from a family that were refugees from Cuba. And has that experience in any way influenced your preference for free market solutions?
Well, it's funny you should say that because in growing up, as you can imagine, leaving Cuba, and my father was a doctor, so he lost everything and came here to this country, had to retrain as a physician, primary care physician. But the word socialism was anathema. And so... Mm-hmm. You know, to even consider government top-down bureaucratic control of something as personal as healthcare is difficult with my upbringing.
And I don't want to belabor this, but I bring it up because Michael Moore, in his movie Sicko, brought a boatload of people who couldn't get their health needs covered in America to Cuba, ostensibly to get coverage from their government-sponsored programs.
I would offer Michael Moore a ticket to one way to go live in Cuba and get his health care there.
And one final remark, you know, there are different varieties of socialism. When you talk about socialism in Cuba, of course, that's a lot different than talking about socialism in Canada or Great Britain or some other locale.
Glenn, I just like to respond to Dr. Riveron by saying that at least at this point of the program, I agree with what he said. We cannot... just fix tweak around the edges of the healthcare problem, but the unsustainability is something that we hear over and over. Our entire healthcare system now, which is 1/6 of our economy and continuing to grow, if nothing significant is done, it truly will be totally unsustainable in the very near future. Which is why a national universal healthcare approach is absolutely essential, I think, for the economy.
I'm going to play a clip from President Obama's address yesterday in which he highlights some of the reasons why he thinks national health care reform is a necessity.
We are the only democracy, the only advanced democracy on earth, the only wealthy nation that allows such hardship for millions of its people. There are now more than 30 million American citizens who cannot get coverage. In just a two-year period, one in every three Americans goes without health care coverage at some point. And every day, 14,000 Americans lose their coverage. In other words, it can happen to anyone. But the problem that plagues the health care system is not just a problem for the uninsured. Those who do have insurance have never had less security and stability than they do today. More and more Americans worry that if you move, lose your job, or change your job, you'll lose your health insurance, too. More and more Americans pay their premiums only to discover that their insurance company has dropped their coverage when they get sick or won't pay the full cost of care. It happens every day. One man from Illinois lost his coverage in the middle of chemotherapy because his insurer found that he hadn't reported gallstones that he didn't even know about. They delayed his treatment, and he died because of it. Another woman from Texas was about to get a double mastectomy when her insurance company canceled her policy because she forgot to declare a case of acne. By the time she had her insurance reinstated, her breast cancer had more than doubled in size. That is heartbreaking, it is wrong, and no one should be treated that way in the United States of America.
Dr. Riveron, the implication here seems to be that there's rationing going on already in America, but it's rationing being done by insurance companies, not by the government, but people who are critically ill are having their coverage denied by bureaucrats working for insurance companies.
I think it's hard to argue with any of the things he just said. There's no question that there's an access problem in healthcare. The you know, I think part of the problem with this debate is that nobody has actually framed the debate and said, okay, look, here are the problems 1, 2, and 3, and what are we going to do about these? The debate is so complicated, and the healthcare system is so complicated, that to focus on some basic things are key. I mean, I think no one would argue that there is an access problem. And secondly, there's an affordability problem. The cost of healthcare is catastrophically high and is pushing some people to become uninsured.
Donna?
Well, I think it's interesting that just today the U.S. Census report came out showing that in Wisconsin, which is one of the states doing the best job in taking care of our citizens, we have 10% of people across the state who are living without insurance. The numbers from the U.S. Census report today were 47 million people in this country living without insurance. That, along with the fact that this country spends 1.5 to 2 times more than any other industrialized country in the world for health care, and so many of our people are so desperately in need of access to health care. There are an awful lot of complex points to it, but I think that the bill, the details that President Obama outlined last night were pretty clear about starting with health insurance reform that will make things tighten up and be a lot better serving the people that we talk to every day. And that is certainly a very important beginning step to address this.
Well, let's look at the numbers he talked about. He said every day 14,000 mm-hmm. Americans lose their coverage. 1 in every 3 Americans goes without coverage at least once every 2 years. And the figure that was used yesterday, more than 30 million American citizens without coverage. Now, as you mentioned, the Census Bureau puts that figure at 46.3 million. Fritz, what's the discrepancy here with the figures?
I don't know where the, 14 million people went to. This is the first time President Obama has decreased that number to 30 million. The number of people that are uninsured is a kind of a difficult number, because there's illegal aliens involved and there's a large number of people who choose not to participate in their employer, healthcare plan. So how many people are actually unable to afford insurance? That's a number that is potentially much lower. It's probably 5 to 10 million.
Now, if it is much lower, wouldn't it be easier then to insure these people with a public health care option? Wouldn't cost as much?
Well,
I mean, if you only have 5 to 10 million that you have to cover.
Well, I think the U.S. Census report showing the enormous growth in the rate of uninsured in Wisconsin is emblematic of how that growth is across the country. And the other piece that I think people are looking at is that every single day, 14,000 Americans lose their job. That could be us, our neighbors, our friends. And when we lose our job, most often we lose our health care. So anybody can be just a day away from a catastrophic situation. And thus, I think the increased attention and demand for health care reform.
State Representative Donna Seidel, a Democrat of Wausau, also Dr. Fernando Fritz Riveron, a Wausau area surgeon. We're talking about national health care. We're going to be taking your phone calls right after this short break, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. This is Route 51, Regional Talk Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
We are talking about health care reform, the president's address to the nation last night with our guests, Dr. Fernando Fritz Riveron, a Wausau area surgeon, State Representative Donna Seidel. Our lines are full right now, but as soon as somebody drops off, you can reach us at 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. I'm going to go to Dorothy in Mosinee, who has been waiting patiently. Dorothy, you're on Route 51.
Hello.
Hello, Dorothy. You're on the radio.
Okay, hello.
Yes, can you hear me? You're on the radio.
Yes.
Your question, please.
Well, I think the president, I liked what I heard last night. It's complicated, but I don't think it can be solved piecemeal. But Donna, how do you think the president's plan will affect the Wisconsin's health programs like Badger Care, Badger Care Plus, and Senior Care?
Well, as I said, Dorothy, earlier, Wisconsin is already one of the really leading states in providing assistance to low-income people. I think that the government's program, and we've seen evidence of that even in the last few days, that there could be federal supplements to support these programs even more. I think that with universal care outlined by the president, that perhaps we will have less need to supplement so many of our state programs. If people can get opportunities of good insurance through their employers or through this exchange that the president was talking about setting up.
Are you saying that a federal plan might eliminate the need for state programs or might make them more cost effective because fewer people would have to use them?
I'm hoping that it's that case, Glenn, correct.
And Dorothy, I see on my computer you've also got a question for Dr. Riveron.
Yes, I'd like to know who pays for the emergency room care for the uninsured now.
Well, the answer is we do. There really is nothing free. I mean, when you think about it, the escalating cost of healthcare really is because we provide healthcare to everyone. No one's ever turned away.
And where does the money come from?
Our taxes.
You know, Dorothy, that's interesting. That really is a hidden tax, and this is when we talk about money is already being spent. In Wisconsin last year, there was almost $900 million of costs to providers and hospitals for two things: charity care, the situation you're talking about, people getting to an emergency room because they have no other access, and bad debt. People who have had escalating premiums and high-level deductibles that they can no longer meet. $900 million last year is a hidden tax that we should be using in a much different, more effective way.
Dorothy, thanks so much for the phone call. Fritz, just as a follow-up, what solutions would you have that would be market-based to get away from a situation where so many of the uninsured end up going to emergency rooms for their primary care, and that cost gets passed along to all of us in terms of higher medical bills? Because, you know, when we treat those people, the people who have money have to make up for it somehow.
Well, I think you hit the exact problem right on the head. The issue with healthcare, you know, we're beating around the edges of the problem. And, you know, to use a medical analogy, this is like we're taking care of the symptoms rather than going after the main disease. And even in President Obama's speech last night, the details were really lacking. I mean, none of us really know what plan we're talking about. But moreover, all that we're seeing from our government is Band-Aids and patchwork of the existing system. The existing system is a third-party payment system, which means that some people will call it a moral hazard. But what it means is that the person who's actually getting care is completely separate from the payment system. So in other words, you have no idea what anything costs, and you have no idea about value, quality, or cost.
So your solution would be?
Well, there's a number of different solutions for this kind of thing, but they all involve essentially putting some skin in the game, meaning that you use some of your own money to pay for what you're actually getting in services. For example, I mean, think about it. If you paid grocery insurance, right? You pay someone for your grocery bill for the month, and then they take care of it. You show up to the grocery store with an empty cart. What are you going to put in your cart? I mean, is there any wonder? This is exactly, this third-party payment issue is exactly what's causing the rise of medical costs to be astronomically high. We want everything at all times, regardless of what it costs.
Are there any politicians who are advocating what you favor?
Well, Congressman Paul Ryan from Janesville,
Republican of Janesville,
has a plan that's on his website, the Patients Choice Act, that's all market based. But interestingly, I just read an article in the Atlantic by a Mr. Goldhill that who's a Democrat, and he had an interesting run in. His father died in a hospital, and it led him to sort of make this the cause of his life, to look at the systemic issues with healthcare. And we're talking about healthcare reform, but we're not getting down to cutting out the cancer that is destroying the system.
I want to go back to the phones right now. Let's go to, let's see who's next. It's David in Ironwood. David, you're on Route 51.
Oh, this is my issue. I mean, I'm just covered on my wife's policy, but, you know, if my wife loses her job, I have hairy cell leukemia. The treatments run about $100,000 a week. You know, if my wife loses the job, if I get remission, you know, who's going to pay for that? I have a real simple idea. You make the insurance companies pay by the same rules Walmart goes by. That means when Walmart sells a bottle, 20-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola to you, it charges anyone coming through the door the same price. Do that. Healthy people will pay more under this plan, but it will help employers. Right now, I can't hardly get work because no one, I wouldn't hire me.
Hey, do you have a pre-existing condition?
Yeah, I have a pre-existing condition, and, you know,
and
who
that's
would hire me and have their health care costs go way up?
And that's keeping you from getting adequate health care coverage or even work. Donna Seidel, what is the solution for pre-existing conditions?
I think David's story is unfortunately one that we hear way too often. So, best of luck to you, David. And your situation, your message here today is just ongoing reason why it's so important for the reform of health insurance industry practices. So appreciate your call.
We are going to have to break for the news. David, thanks so much for the phone call.
I asked about my plan about using same price, same coverage.
All right, we'll bring that up after the break. Thanks so much, David in Ironwood. Thanks for the phone call. We want to hear from you. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. Our guest, State Representative Donna Seidel, a Democrat of Wausau who favors President Obama's health care initiative, and Dr. Fernando Fritz Riveron, a Wausau area surgeon who has some doubts. More of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio right after this news.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. The subject today, it's what everybody's talking about, national health care reform. Did you see the president's speech to the joint session of Congress yesterday? Our two guests did, Donna Seidel, Democratic State Representative from Wausau, and Dr. Fernando Fritz Riveron, a heart surgeon from Wausau. We want to hear from you, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Before we move on, I want to play another clip from last night, and then I'm going to play a clip from the Republican response. And I want to do that now because if I don't do it, we're not going to get to it with the way the calls are stacking up. First of all, we're going to hear President Obama talk about one of the most controversial aspects of the legislation that's pending in Congress, the call for a government-run public option as an alternative to privately run health insurance.
But an additional step we can take to keep insurance companies honest is by making a not-for-profit public option available in the insurance exchange. Let me be clear. It would only be an option for those who don't have insurance. No one would be forced to choose it, and it would not impact those of you who already have insurance. In fact, based on Congressional Budget Office estimates, we believe that less than 5% of Americans would sign up. Despite all this, the insurance companies and their allies don't like this idea. They argue that these private companies can't fairly compete with the government. And they'd be right if taxpayers were subsidizing this public insurance option. But they won't be. I've insisted that, like any private insurance company, the public insurance option would have to be self-sufficient and rely on the premiums it collects. But by avoiding some of the overhead that gets eaten up at private companies by profits and excessive administrative costs and executive salaries, it could provide a good deal for consumers. It would also keep pressure on private insurers to keep their policies affordable and treat their customers better. The same way public colleges and universities provide additional choice and competition to students without in any way inhibiting a vibrant system of private colleges and universities.
Donna Seidel, the president is saying that a public insurance option is really no more threatening than having public universities competing with private universities and private colleges.
I thought it was a really great analogy for the president to make. So it does the market-based competition that people are eager for. And what it does is to say, let's get a not-for-profit insurance company into the business, a company, as the president said, with low overhead, a company that isn't paying its CEO $10 million plus a year to be competitive. Won't be offering a Cadillac plan, but it will be giving an opportunity for the people in this country without any insurance and ability to buy something they can afford, something that is simply not available to them now.
Fritz Riveron, his prediction was that only 5%, maybe 1 in 20 people would end up on the public option. Does that seem right to you?
No, not at all. In fact, there was one estimate that I read that in the public plan, because the competition between a public plan, which is subsidized by the government, and moreover in the Kennedy bill, H.R. 3200, which has actually passed the House, they actually talk about the public plan, but they talk about indemnifying it. That means that it can't fail, that if at any point it runs in negative cash flow, that they would, without legislation, without any further amendments, they would it would trigger transfer from tax collections and general revenue. So in other words, you would have a public plan, according to this H.R. 3200, that has to compete with private insurance companies, but is funded by the government, controlled by the government, who sets the rules on the insurance companies. So it's not a level playing field. So some people have estimated that the exodus from private insurance plans will be as high as 100 million.
What if you made the public option only available to people who absolutely couldn't get insurance from private industry?
I think that's possible, but the question is, the way that it's set up in the current legislation that's going through Congress isn't like that at all.
I think the president's plan that he put forth last night was different than that. He clarified that the public option he was promoting would in fact be self-sustaining, would not be government subsidized, but would rather be paid for by the premium it collects and by dealing with a not-for-profit insurance company. The governor also the president also stretched out his hand and said the objective is to find affordable access for everyone. So if there are other ideas by people from either side of the aisle to come forward and say this is how we can do it instead of the public option that you promote.
Well, there were other ideas that were put forth, ideas specifically by Republican Representative Charles Bustani of Louisiana, himself a heart surgeon, who gave this response to the president's address.
Replacing your family's current health care with government-run health care is not the answer. In fact, it'll make health care much more expensive. I read the bill Democrats passed through committee in July. It creates 53 new government bureaucracies, adds hundreds of billions to our national debt, and raises taxes on job creators by $600 billion. And it cuts Medicare by $500 billion while doing virtually nothing to make the program better for our seniors. The president had a chance tonight to take the government-run health care off the table. Unfortunately, he didn't do it. We can do better with a targeted approach that tackles the biggest problems. Here are four important areas where we can agree right now. One, all individuals should have access to coverage, regardless of pre-existing conditions. Two, individuals, small businesses, and other groups should be able to join together to get health insurance at lower prices, the same way large businesses and labor unions do. Three, we can provide assistance to those who still cannot access a doctor. And four, insurers should be able to offer incentives for wellness care and prevention.
Donna Seidel, 53 new federal bureaucracies, hundreds of billions of dollars added to the national debt, raising taxes on job creators by $600 billion, cutting Medicare by $500 billion, and not helping the seniors on it. That sounds pretty scary.
Well, it sounds scary, and I'm not sure exactly what part of the president's plan that he unveiled last night he is talking about. When we look at bureaucracy and what our providers and our hospitals have to deal with, what I hear about all too often is from the providers, physicians themselves, about the bureaucracy that they have to battle and combat with the insurance industry and how much of the time, their uncompensated time of the day, is spent with that. I did a pharmaceutical ride-along last week, the first in the country with one of our pharmaceutical companies, and had a great opportunity to talk to three area providers and services. And time after time, again, unsolicited testimonies from these providers about the battles they face every day with the bureaucracy and the controls placed on them by the insurance companies.
Fritz Riveron, as a surgeon, do you ever have to battle with insurance company bureaucrats?
You know, as a matter of fact, I did so just today on a medication that wasn't covered. But you've got to know that as much as we may suffer with regulations from insurance companies, Medicare is a completely different animal. The regulations involved with Medicare compliance are so labyrinthine, they're absolutely destructive to our efficiency. It is like tenfold worse than in private insurance companies.
Do you ever have problems getting Medicare reimbursement?
Medicare reimbursement is actually fixed.
I mean, you as a surgeon, do you get reimbursed on a regular basis from the government?
If you look at the actual cost of delivery of care versus Medicare reimbursement, the cost is actually higher than what is reimbursed by Medicare. And this is across the board. This isn't just heart surgeons. The way that hospitals survive is that they balance bill. They have private insurance companies that pay significantly more. So if you think about what that means, all the profit margin in every hospital, in every medical group, is directly from balanced billing because Medicare doesn't pay the bills.
I want to bring up one of the things that Representative Bustani said, and everybody seems to think that the insurance companies should be forced to insure people with pre-existing conditions. Now, I don't know, and I'm just speaking from private experience here, how do you do that without having a public insurance option? Because the whole idea of insurance is to insure somebody against a possibility of something that will happen. If I wreck my car, okay, if I total my car, I can't go to Allstate and say, hey, Mr. Insurance Man, I just wrecked my car. I'd like to take out an insurance policy, and will you replace it for me? In a sense, if you go to an insurance company and say, I've got diabetes, I've got Crohn's disease, or in my case, I've got a hip replacement, that at one point when I tried to get private insurance, I was turned down by all the private insurance companies. They won't insure you for a pre-existing condition. And it seems like they would go bankrupt if they did. So how do you get people insured with a pre-existing condition without having a public option?
Well, for one thing, Glenn, there's certainly a difference between a company going bankrupt and a company making a $3 billion or more profit annually. So there is, I think, some room for movement there. But clearly, the insurance companies would have to reevaluate exactly how they do business and what their motives and goals are. If they really are to take care of people's health care and improve their health care, they will be a different company that will apply for this exchange program that would be set up to provide for our universal coverage.
Was my analogy with the auto industry wrong? I mean, auto insurance works that way. You can't get insurance for your car that you just damaged.
No, I think that's a great analogy. But if, as a society, we make the decision that we're going to cover everybody, and so we're going to cover people with pre-existing conditions, that's a decision that we make as a compassionate society. And that may be okay. But I've got to very respectfully differ with you, Donna, that insurance companies are businesses. The compassionate care of a patient is between the doctor and the patient. The insurance company is just out there to make sure that they don't lose money and that they don't run in the red. The Kennedy bill, interestingly, of course, puts a lot of insurance regulations, tries to deal with insurance reform. And so the guaranteed issue is the point that you're bringing up, that It would be guaranteed that everybody could get insurance, period. Well, what that does is some people are really high risk and some people are really low risk. The potential free market option would be to establish risk pools, risk sharing pools, where everybody gets insurance, but that it's spread, the risk is spread out in such a way that it's economically feasible.
I want to go back to the phones. We have a number of people who have been waiting very patiently, especially Ann in Merrill. Ann, you're on Route 51.
Thank you for taking my call this evening. This is a wonderful conversation. Glenn, even though this wasn't my planned comment, briefly, I would like to disagree with your analogy about the car insurance. Your body is not completely broken. It's not beyond use. You certainly are just a little bit higher risk, and I think that Dr. Riveron's discussion about risk pools is an adequate one and a good one. People with pre-existing conditions, I believe, should be insured, but perhaps their insurance might cost a little bit more because they are higher risk. And I don't think that's wrong for them to have to either pay a little bit more or be involved in a pool that spreads the risk out a little bit more, because as Dr. Riveron did say, insurance companies are not there to take care of patients and to be sympathetic. They're there, they're businesses. They're there to make money. But it is an important point. I guess the point that I originally wanted to make was that I personally am a physician as well. I am definitely not always a fan of the insurance companies. I will not give Representative Seidel any more unsolicited testimony about the struggles on a daily basis. But the insurance companies do seem to be taking a little bit of unfair advantage of the population by taking the risk out of covering people. They are picking and choosing people. And, you know, when I was in school as a little kid, I learned insurance companies take on a risk, and that's how they make money. And they're making a good bet that most people will not have to spend a lot of money on their health. That's one issue. The other issue is, though, that I'm not a fan of government-run programs at all. Medicare reimbursement, as Dr. Riveron stated, is very poor in comparison to general insurance companies. There are many physicians and many practices out there that would be out of business if they only had Medicare paying them. Rural areas are definitely difficult that way. The payer mix in rural areas with government programs is very challenging for physicians to stay in practice. And it's not that the physicians don't care and they're not sympathetic, but the average physician today graduates from medical school with $250,000 worth of loans and cannot pay those off with $12 from Medicare every time they read an EKG. It's just not feasible.
And I wanted to give you a lot of time because you've been waiting a long while. You've put a lot on our plate. Let me get our guests to respond to you.
Thank you.
Who wants to start?
Well, I would like to respond, and just generally about the high cost of Medicare and talk about how some of the fixes that this national plan would in fact make and how it could impact Medicare. We know that the new recipients of Medicare, that so many of these are individuals who come into the program having not been insured before. As a result, without early, without preventive care, without annual care, they are coming, presenting themselves to you with chronic diseases and sometimes quite exacerbated conditions that had they had opportunities earlier on to get the, you know, preventive and regular care, that could be preventive. Another statistics that I just recently saw about Medicare was that Medicare patients with two or more chronic diseases consume over 90% of Medicare costs. So I think the essential part of healthcare reform is requiring insurance companies to cover these preventive treatments and regular routine treatments so that we don't get to, obviously, quality of life issues.
Actually,
for so many
Medicare right now doesn't cover preventive routine things very frequently at all. If people come in for a preventive visit, it is not well covered by Medicare for people. And often my patients want to come in and they say, but I'm not here for a preventive visit because Medicare doesn't cover it.
But the president's plan would require that insurance companies would cover these folks so that when they got to Medicare, they would have had the advantage of good quality health care before that, before the age of 65.
Ann, thanks so much for the phone call. We've got to move on. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Our guest, Dr. Fritz Riveron. He is a Wausau area surgeon, and State Representative Donna Seidel. We're talking about health care and the president's address to the nation last night. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're going to go back to the phones. Ed in Wausau, you're on Route 51. Hello, Ed.
Hi. Probably the doctor might know more about this question. I've been on the regular Medicare for 2 years, and I like to look at the bills that I get from, it's called CMS. They're the part of Medicare that figures out how the physician is reimbursed. And my question is actually two-part. Part one is, when I just go to my regular family practice physician, for a visit, which can vary from 15 minutes to an hour. It was an hour when I fell off the ladder. But the family practice physician only gets reimbursed $28, whereas when I go to an eye specialist for 10 minutes, the billing was like $180. They reimbursed him. And then the second part was I know some friends of mine that are...
Quickly, Ed, we're running out of time.
Medicare
here.
Advantage plan, and when you belong to that, that's a Cadillac plan that costs more. But then Medicare itself subsidizes Medicare Advantage about 14-15%. But that's my questions.
Well, what about Medicare Advantage, Fritz Riveron, and what about the way different specialists are reimbursed at different rates?
Well, I'm going to try to answer that, but I'm going to answer it from a real global perspective. You see, what you're talking about when you talk about Medicare is a government-run healthcare system. Now, this is the way the government runs this. The fee schedule doesn't make any sense. The incentives are not making any sense whatsoever. We need primary care. We need primary care to be more visible in preventative care with patients, but Medicare doesn't reimburse that way. Medicare right now reimburses more for procedures or for proceduralists by far. The incentives aren't aligned. The incentives right now are through Medicare are for people to do more procedures at higher reimbursement.
And is there a problem with that? Is there a problem with the way Medicare is set up? And do you think that would be a similar problem with the public option?
Well, I think any top-down control system does just this. They don't understand what's going on at the level of the patient that goes in to see the primary care doctor or the ophthalmologist. And so they try to come up with these global fee structures that the rest of us, we doctors, look at Medicare as a nonsensical labyrinth of regulation.
And how do you look at insurance companies, which have become so big that in some ways maybe you could look at them as being quasi-governments?
You do, but interestingly, I would put it to you that insurance companies actually do more things to reasonably try to control cost than Medicare, for example. Medicare, the government-run healthcare system, has very little control of cost. It's essentially anything you want, anytime you get it, and you get the Cadillac.
I think there is a real effort movement throughout the state, certainly like Wisconsin and throughout the country, to improve the delivery and look at managed care versus fee-for-service, because just as Fritz pointed out, the fee-for-service model has shown to be more costly. And I think that in the effort to reform healthcare throughout the country, universal health care in the United States, there's going to be a real push to do these kinds of things throughout the entire Medicare system.
I'm going to play one more clip, and it's President Obama toward the end of his address, in which he brought forth the memory of the late Senator Edward Kennedy.
For some of Ted Kennedy's critics, his brand of liberalism represented an affront to American liberty. In their minds, his passion for universal health care was nothing more than a passion for big government. But those of us who knew Teddy and worked with him here, people of both parties, know that what drove him was something more. His friend Orrin Hatch. He knows that. They work together to provide children with health insurance. His friend John McCain knows that. They work together on a patient's bill of rights. His friend Chuck Grassley knows that. They work together to provide health care to children with disabilities. on issues like these, Ted Kennedy's passion was born not of some rigid ideology, but of his own experience. It was the experience of having two children stricken with cancer. He never forgot the sheer terror and helplessness that any parent feels when a child is badly sick. And he was able to imagine what it must be like for those without insurance. What it'd be like to have to say to a wife or a child or an aging parent, there is something that could make you better, but I just can't afford it. That large-heartedness, that concern and regard for the plight of others is not a partisan feeling. It's not a Republican or a Democratic feeling. It, too, is part of the American character.
Donna Seidel, do you think President Obama changed any minds last night?
I think he did change minds, and I think his conversation about the character of our country was really important. I think another comment he made that is going to really drive what policymakers throughout the country need to balance in figuring this health care issue out is the balance between what he called the dangers of too much government matched by the perils of too little. And to me, that is exactly what we're talking about in this health care debate.
Fritz Riveron, Donna Seidel, thanks so much for being with us. We are plumb out of time. We want to thank both of you for a respectful, reasoned conversation for the past hour on a very contentious topic. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and on-air producer, Rick Ryer. Next week, we look at the push to generate power in Wisconsin with alternative energy and the Domtar Paper Mill project in Rothschild with their biomass generating facility. Thanks for riding with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.